Take a network break. Help yourself to a virtual donut and join us for our weekly review of tech news. We've got stories on Cisco, Arista, Brocade, HPE, and more. I'm Drew Conry Murray, and with me is Greg Farrow. And we're recording from a hotel room in San Jose because we're both on site for Network Field Day. All right, we got a lot to talk about, but before we do, I want to thank our sponsors. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code NETWORKBREAK30. This episode is also being brought to you by ThousandEyes. ThousandEyes delivers visibility into every network your organization relies on, from your data center to the cloud, so you can quickly and precisely pinpoint the root cause of network issues wherever they occur. Sign up for a free account at ThousandEyes.com/packetpushers and choose a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. Thanks to our sponsors. Okay, jumping into the news, if you recall, last year, Broadcom announced they were acquiring network vendor Brocade for their fiber channel business. As part of the deal, Broadcom planned to sell off the IP networking part of the business so as not to compete with its own customers. Now, Reuters is reporting that a company called Aris, which makes set-top boxes, may be looking to buy at least part of those Brocade assets.
Yeah, so we know, of course, that when Broadcom bought Brocade, it wanted the fiber channel business. It was very clear that it just wanted to have that, and it would have to divest the Ethernet because other customers would whinge.
Yes,
and in other words, Cisco, because Cisco is Brocade's biggest customer for its Ethernet ASICs, right? And so divesting itself of the Brocade Ethernet switch line is necessary to ensure not a conflict of interest. Although, funnily enough, Cisco is the second largest fiber channel supplier, but we don't seem to see that as a competitive interest. A little bit odd, that, isn't it?
A little odd. I presumably Broadcom knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
but so this talk about Aris being a potential buyer, and it was hard to parse the Reuters story. I wasn't sure if they just wanted the wireless business or some other, they called it the network edge part of the business.
Yes.
But they said they were not interested in data center switching and software.
Yeah. So I think that's, the reporter might not be very proficient in technology, shall we say?
Yes.
Or at least, whatever. I suspect when they say the network edge, they're talking about campus and wireless.
Okay.
So increasingly the wireless vendors are getting into Ethernet switches.
Yes.
So that you can bind the whole campus thing. So wireless and Ethernet campus is kind of indivisible these days.
Yeah.
Not least, of course, because if you've got wireless access points, guess what they plug into? Ethernet switches.
Yes.
So you want to have a turnkey solution. People still believe in the one throat to choke and all that. You want one supplier, not 10, even though 10 suppliers is better than one. I think what you're seeing is Aris is saying, we'll buy... Now, Aris itself is a service provider. They supply, telco stuff at the edge of the market.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really take time to look at what Aris does. But basically, I think they make...
Set-top boxes.
Yeah, broadband network set-top boxes.
Yeah.
So what they're saying is they want to move into supplying carrier-grade service provider, move from the set-top box into the core.
Mm-hmm.
And buying the Ruckus Wireless acquisition, which Brocade sort of just got and was just getting,
And
integrated. The campus business unit, which is also white box. So it's not white box, but it's a commercial merchant silicon from Broadcom increasingly. Mm-hmm. But there's some neat stuff in the Brocade campus stuff. A lot of people don't know about the HyperEdge and the virtual stacking, and they've got some good stuff in there that is actually probably well worth building into a portfolio. But where does that leave data center? Where does that leave the SDN portfolio?
That's the issue. If you're going to parcel it out, then the value diminishes and the number of customers who are going to buy a data center portfolio starts to drop.
Well, then it becomes, instead of Brocade was building a complete portfolio, you've got from wireless right the way through to the data center, you've got the WAN routers, you've got the MPLS backbones. They're very popular in carrier networks for their high-speed 100 gig switches and, blah, blah, blah.
And they've also got a software unit that's trying to do some interesting stuff around orchestration with
StackStorm. And NFV,
particularly
NFV for carriers with the Viata acquisition, and they've been building.
Right, that's right. They also have Viata. Mm-hmm.
And they're also very big on the open daylight. So their commitment to rebadging open daylight and offering that as a commercial controller, both for carriers and for enterprise. Now, so if that leaves the data center business unit and the SDN portfolio on the block, what happens then?
I don't know.
No, we don't. Right?
We don't know.
And so what they're saying is the article actually says that originally there was a deal on the table to sell Brocade without fiber channel as a single sale.
Yeah.
That fell through. Then they parceled it up into three pieces, and they've been going that around, and Aris is potentially looking at buying the Ruckus Wireless and the campus switching.
And we should note, Reuters is saying Aris may be spending as much as $1 billion, but Brocade, when they acquired Ruckus, they paid $1.5 billion.
Mm.
So Broadcom is... it seems like they're interested in the sale, even if they're not getting their money back.
It might be a distressed sale.
Yeah.
People know that Broadcom has to sell this,
mm-hmm.
and there's not a whole lot of interest from too many places, because that's what we said when the Broadcom did this.
They were going to have trouble moving it.
Who's going to buy it, right? Cisco doesn't need it. Juniper doesn't need it. They're the big ones who've probably got some cash to do for acquisitions. There's nothing, innovative. There are innovative pieces, but not enough innovation across the spectrum of a $5 billion purchase to make that.
Yeah, yep. Or to have to integrate that into your own line. I always thought it was Ruckus that was the piece that would be easiest to sell, because companies like Juniper, who don't have their own wireless portfolio, may have been able to better control their own destiny, but it doesn't seem like the interest
there is
happening.
Yeah, but Juniper's basically pulled back from that, one of everything, and it's saying, no, what we do is routers. We have some, we're focusing on that carriers and the MPLS and the open, the Contrail products for SDN.
Right.
And, we've got our switching portfolios that are even, they work for enterprise, but they also work for internet exchange points and carrier backbones as well. And that's kind of what we do. We don't seem, I may be wrong there, that my perception is my own, but I don't see Juniper suddenly turning, having bought, I think it was a Belkin's wireless unit a while back.
They bought
somebody's wireless unit for, $300 million or something, and then started to wind that out, and then all of a sudden went, oh, no. It's kind of like, make your mind up. What are you doing? You're either in or you're out.
Yeah.
Don't sit there and go down this path and say, whoa. So it's going to be interesting. We could be seeing, the end of this. If there's no sale, what happens? I mean, we don't know.
Right. So we'll keep an eye on this. Sticking with acquisition news, HPE has announced plans to acquire Simplivity. That's a hyperconverged infrastructure play. HPE is going to pay $650 million in cash for the company. That's a nice sum, but not necessarily the valuation that Simplivity was aiming for.
No, and so this is the long-heralded rationalization in the hyperconverged. You can't have, a dozen startups selling hyperconverged infrastructure, each with their own software play, even though they're using, a lot of these people are based off open source software, so they don't actually have to do a lot of the heavy lifting. It's all done for them.
Right.
But with VMware increasingly pushing the VX rail, and then now Dell EMC getting very aggressive around hyperconverged, because VCE is a $2 billion business, and I'm sort of seeing signs that VCE and VX and VMware are getting very close. But, it's now with Dell servers, it's one EMC's, a legacy storage. It's not really hyperconverged, it's just converged. But it does show that converged has a thing. That's like a $2 billion business, which is staggering.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Nutanix got away with a fairly substantial float, about a $2 billion float a couple of weeks back, just before Christmas. And now Simplivity has been acquired by HPE, which suggests. So a couple of things there is, one is, why is HPE buying Simplivity? And the answer is probably because of the storage software. Although HPE has the acquisition of its storage that was with part of the Left Hand acquisition about 5, maybe 8 years ago, they haven't kept up the investment in that over time, and their software is kind of dated, so the architecture hasn't been refreshed. So the guess is that by buying Simplivity, they get themselves a distributed storage engine and an orchestration platform that they can bring into their portfolio, bring in HPE servers, add a splash of Simplivity software. The difficult part, of course, is that they deduped the price. So Simplicity was raising funds about a year ago, had a $1.2 billion valuation.
Right.
And we definitely know that the acquisition was at $650 million. The acquisition, the fundraising was pretty well known amongst circles. Apparently they went a long way around when they raised the funds, so everybody sort of knows. So the valuation of Simplivity, in effect, over a year, has gone from $1.2 billion to $650 million. That's not necessarily an endorsement for the hyperconverged business.
No, not necessarily. And I wonder if maybe Nutanix will see a little hit on share price because
they did.
That. They did.
Yeah, they dropped 6 to 10%. So it's been fluctuating down.
Okay.
People are saying, if Simplivity is not worth this much, then the capital price of Nutanix is down.
It's a little too high. Okay.
And I think we're going to see more of these. Obviously Cisco's got its hyperconverged with everybody and his dog, and
But they're closely tied with SpringPath, which does the software, the storage part of the.
But at the same time, Cisco's got a blog post out today talking about their advanced ecosystem and touting their 20 different storage partners in hyperconverged place. So, we've got one of everything, right? So, and I think HPE is the natural acquirer here. It does let them advance very quickly into selling hyperconverged and play catch up with Dell, while HPE's been very distracted with, the split and then divesting the micro software to Micro Focus and, rationalizing itself. This actually gets them 2 or 3 years down the track into a hyperconverged play.
Yeah.
Whereas Dell's got VCE, which is, big footprint breaking into accounts, I imagine. And so this makes sense. the price looks fair. You know, yeah, it's not a hyperinflated price like HP has paid in the past. Right. They have a long history of buying dumb things.
They definitely learned their lesson.
And overall, most people seem to think that this is a pretty good idea, is the sort of sense that I have. There's a couple of blog posts from various people around the thing sort of saying nobody's critical of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that rhymes with my perspective. What about you?
Yeah, same thing. Mm. Seems like a smart move. All right, we had mentioned Cisco earlier. There's another twist in the Cisco Arista patent infringement case. In November 2016, Customs and Border Protection Agency ruled that Arista would be allowed to import its products into the United States, saying they didn't violate any patents. Apparently, Cisco went and complained to Customs, and now the agency has actually reversed its own decision. So potentially, they could therefore block Arista from bringing any equipment into the U.S. The agency hasn't specifically said, Arista, you've infringed, and Arista is appealing to the agency. So, again, we don't really know what's going to happen. But this is actually, last time we talked about this, we said Arista kind of scored a point here, and now it seems like there's been a reversal of fortune.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing here is there's Cisco's case to the Customs Border Protection is getting traction.
Yeah.
But Arista's case with the ITC, the International Trade Commission, is winning there. And this is all, of course, pending the actual patent hearings, which are years away.
Yeah.
So I think these scuffles are really sort of highlighting the fact that it's not really going in the direction that anybody wants. I think Arista's winning more, still convinced Arista's winning more than it's losing here. But having some chats, because we're in the Valley, I had some chats. I've been out visiting CEOs and you know, blah, blah, blah. And the suggestion is that actually this is going to go on forever, which is awesome for this because we've got something to talk about.
That's good for us.
The reason is it's not a business. The attacks here of the Cisco versus Arista thing isn't about business. It's absolutely personal. Mm-hmm. Someone's got a personal grudge. There's an axe to grind, and there's enough people in Cisco who want to grind that axe.
And they happen to have billions of dollars.
Yeah, that's right. Which, and you know, at the end of the day, I am not at all impressed by the whole thing.
No. Right?
It does not. No.
It's not making anybody look good.
No, I don't see how this works out. So I wrote a blog post this week. I've turned etherealmind.com, which is my long-term blog, and now it's a microblog. So instead of trying to log, you know, 500 to 1,000 words articles with deep thought and stuff, it's just little eruptions of something, right? So I put out, there's four things, I think. I think Cisco, as I've said many of these before, and I don't think this changes anything. Cisco is validating Arista as a serious and viable competitor.
Yes.
On balance, Arista gets more out of this than Cisco does, and it's doing a nice job of being the underdog. So Cisco should give up, right? If you're creating a competitor and boosting them, why aren't you giving up,
right?
Rumors suggest that it's a personal matter to attack Arista for a significant number of executives over at Cisco, mainly because, you know, as Cisco keeps sacking people, guess where they go? To their competitors.
Sure.
And those people know an awful lot about Cisco. They're right. All 10-year, 20-year veterans of Cisco, so they know where all the skeletons are hidden. You know, these people are often egomaniacs and sociopaths, and so we could probably do with less of that. But anyway, I think customers on the whole that I've spoken to perceive Cisco as wasting time and energy on legal matters instead of innovating on products. What we want to see is Cisco focusing on the products and what customers want instead of having a public airing dirty laundry at every step. And in the end of the day, customers' money is actually being wasted on lawyers instead of solutions. So where's the value for the customer? If Cisco is a really customer-focused organization, as it would appear to be hypocritical about, because if it cared about customers, it wouldn't be doing this.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, I would kind of want to call on Cisco to say, you know, man up, you're not going to win. This isn't what customers want. There's no value here for customers, only for your shareholders. And your shareholders only exist when your customers are happy. So, you know.
Focus on them. I agree. All right, quick sponsor break. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV. With IT Pro TV, you gain access to the most important tools needed to prepare you for your IT certification. And Greg, you can tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, IT Pro TV, of course, is a training system, training tool, training platform. It's more than just, it's very much about this video training capability. And every year, they have over 2,000 hours of high-quality video, and they're adding more every week, so there's more content. So if you sign up today, in a year's time, there'll be a lot more there than you want. Courses are streamed live, if that's what you think, but but mostly they, I would say you're going to watch them on demand on your favorite platform, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, you know, your mobile device. You might want to watch them at work during your lunchtime, so you can put them up on your iPad or your iPhone or whatever you like. There's a lot of new courses coming up. They particularly want us to tell you about their cybersecurity, their CCNA Cyber Ops, Understanding Cisco's Cybersecurity Fundamentals, and ITIL Operational Support and Analysis. Don't do that. No one likes ITIL. Now, if you do this, you'll also get access to virtual machine labs and Transcender practice exams as part of your subscription. So if you want to go through and do your certifications and get those certificates as part of your career progress and to be able to deliver something back, you're going to get access to those. Mm-hmm. One low subscription price. And, you know, there's a pretty good customer base. Check out that. And annual memberships can be normally $57 a month or $570 a year. We have a special offer at the Packet Pushers. You can try it for free for 7 days, so you don't have to go all in, and receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That's the lifetime of your account. So for as long as you're a member of IT Pro TV, if you go and sign up at itpro.tv/networkbreak, sign up with the code networkbreak30, and that'll give you just $400 for an entire year of all the videos you can watch.
That's pretty good. And also, they're introducing a new membership level on February 1st. So all current premium members, as of February 1st, you'll get the highest membership level available if you sign up today. So again, go to itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code networkbreak30. And thanks, IT Pro TV, for being a sponsor. Okay, back to the news. Barefoot Networks, that's a startup. They're making programmable networking chips to compete against folks like Broadcom. They've announced two switch lines that are going to be launched in Q1 of this year. The switches are being manufactured by EdgeCore and WNC. The idea is that users of the switches can program how the silicon actually processes packets, and they can add and remove features using the open source P4 programming language. And Greg, you and I are both here at Network Field Day, and Barefoot presented yesterday and kind of sort of captivated the delegates.
Well, you know, I've been very fortunate to be briefed by them like a year ago or so. Maybe even longer, and I've been pretty excited. I'm sure we've talked about it on the show, and I've talked about it with you many times. Mm-hmm. And so to actually see them shipping silicon is quite a substantial step forward.
It really is.
You know, when you can hold the chip in your hand and you can see the chips in the rack.
They passed around the chip,
They're very proudly showing their switch in a rack with the Ixias, you know, and all the traffic generators. And they gave a super slick presentation, right on the money, story arc, progression. Here's how it's going to go. Here's where we fit. Here's why we're going to, you know, this is going to happen. And my favorite part is, you know, they're making a 6.5 terabit ASIC. For those of you who have been following along at home, all of the other ASICs, so the Broadcom ASICs, are all 6.4 terabits. Did you notice that?
I didn't notice that.
So theirs goes to 11.
That's right.
Which was pretty good fun.
That's awesome.
I thought that was just great. What they basically did was they did the usual, you know, 64 by 100 gig ports, but there's an extra 100 gig port to talk to the CPU. Mm-hmm. On the box. Now, that is actually very interesting, because when you've got that kind of bus performance, that speed between the ASIC and the CPU, there's a whole bunch of things that you can now do, because you haven't got some of the legacy switches that you've got today have like 115K serial lines. They're putting in 100 gigabit Ethernet. Mm-hmm. So not only does that give them the extra one, you know, take it up to 11, we're the fastest chip in the market today, which it is, because they've got the extra 100 gig board. It's fully programmable, and we talked all about it yesterday, about this ability to write a script and then compile it. It's much more of a script than a programming language, but it is a programming language. And then you drop it straight onto the ASIC, and then the ASIC has the properties that are being programmed into it.
Right, so the notion is, if you want a packet to flow through a certain set of functions, here's my Ethernet, here's my MPLS, here's my IPv4 or IPv6, you can set up how you want it to flow through.
Yes.
Or if you want to pull one of those things out, like, we don't do MPLS, so I don't need that in the pipeline.
And you can actually start doing your own programming. You can start programming your own tag.
Yeah.
You might say, why have I only got 20 bits for an MPLS tag? I want to make my own tag custom. Mm-hmm. Right? Or the demo that we showed said they were using the TCP options field. Now, for most people, the TCP options field is unused. And if you start rewriting your own TCP options field, you can use that as a tag, as a signaling tag, an in-band signaling tag. Mm-hmm. And that will, of course, travel across the network, because the options field is a normal TCP header.
Right.
And so these types of ideas are really, really powerful. I think the thing that I was most surprised about in the presentation, because, you know, being familiar with the idea of the programmable ASIC, I think they've got about 3 to 5 year head start over Broadcom. I'm sure that
in terms of programmability.
So Cavium's got a programmable pipeline, but it's only 8 stages and it's only a single pipe.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got a recirculating pipeline with 8 stages deep. And so the XPliant chipset, which we've just seen coming out in hardware sort of October, November timeframe, we started talking about it, and I think we flagged that in Network Breaks around there. Now, Barefoot's actually come out and announced that they've got EdgeCore, who's one of the biggest makers of white box switches,
right,
producing a FBOS or Facebook wedge style, an open compute wedge format with the chip in it.
Yep.
So it's not just they ship the chip.
No, they're shipping it in a switch platform.
So you can actually go and buy these today.
Yeah.
And, of course, that means that you have to go and buy some hardware and, you know, you can now start to get your software chops on and start to get stuff going. But they've got open source, the P4 code engine. Your compiler is available, so you can write your own programs and load them into this. Emulators are available. It's not like – so it's not like – Broadcom, where we don't know very much about Broadcom, who runs a closed platform.
Yeah.
They have a proprietary API. You're only allowed to know the API if you sign up, sign an NDA, mm-hmm. and if you breach the NDA, they'll revoke your license. If you want to use the API, you have to have a license. You have to pay for it.
Right.
So programming the, you know, all of the Broadcom silicon just costs, you know, companies have to pay licenses and there's legals and there's blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Barefoot's gone, it's chip. It's programmable. Here's our API. Here's an open source platform. Here's a library of open source functions on p4.org that you can go and download. If you don't think that's not attractive to companies, like especially the MSDCs, the mega scale data center providers like mm-hmm. Amazon, Netflix, Google, instead of having to do business with a company that keeps saying, no, you know, legal agreements, don't, no secrets, no open source, no, you know, they want to be away from that, I think.
Yeah, well, a couple of things that Nick McEwen, who's one of the co-founders, and you may have heard his name before because he was behind Nicira, which turned into VMware NSX. He's also a Stanford professor, very well known in the industry. In his presentation, a couple of the value points he said is that with a programmable chip, you get the feature refresh benefits of software. You don't have to wait for new features to be burned into the hardware like you do in a Broadcom or some other fixed function chip. If something new comes out, you can have it or code it up yourself. The second thing was that you can decide what features you want. And of course, the web scale folks are going to be interested in this because they have the teams to take advantage of the programmability. But talking to some other network field day delegates who are just at a regular enterprise, they said, one of the things I like about this is I can get a feature stack that isn't full of CRUD that I don't need.
No,
it's just the functions I want.
Yeah.
A nice stripped down, clean.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Barefoot's not going to produce the operating system.
Right.
Barefoot's got its chip.
Yeah.
That's what they make. That's what they sell.
Right.
So somebody else is going to put the chip inside of the switch.
Yeah.
So the pitch there, of course, is that that's like Intel. You have an x86 CPU or you've got a GPU, you know, AMD or NVIDIA make the GPUs and it goes onto graphics cards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who makes the graphics cards? A whole bunch of companies, right? So who then makes the software that runs on top of an Intel x86 or a GPU or a DSP or all of those general purpose silicon things that we have? And the answer is somebody else does.
Right.
So what Barefoot wants to go do is make the chips. Then companies will put those chips into silicon. Will we see companies like Cisco and Juniper and Brocade putting those chips into their silicon? I think the story is compelling.
I do too.
But then again, it could be very disruptive. They've got long-term supply agreements. It could be years for them to adapt their software pipelines to what will we see? Will Cisco want to be beholden to somebody else for custom, you know, for silicon? You know, would they be happy having an open silicon?
I mean, I think actually in some ways allows a vendor like Cisco or Juniper to take more control of their own destiny.
Yes.
Because of all the things they can do in software now that they aren't beholden to the chip provider anymore.
Yes.
It's essentially like Intel, it's an open platform. So you can run your Microsoft on it or VMware or Linux. You know, you can pick which path you want to go down.
That's right. And so today you might want to go and start using Open vSwitch or you might want to go and buy Cumulus and run it on your, you know, Barefoot Tofino chip inside of an edge core switch.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe tomorrow you want to go and buy IP Infusion, or maybe you want to switch over to, you know, some other operating system because that's a better one, or the bugs in, you know, this company that you were buying from 5 years later isn't the company that it used to be.
Right.
You know, or they're deprecating this particular line of software because something, right?
Yeah.
And so you get choices. So the hardware could be, I mean, for most enterprises, if you had a switch that has 6400 gig ports, and keep in mind that 100 gig can be 50, 40, 25, 10.
Yeah.
And they've got various cut down versions of it well, which I thought interesting as well.
You're right. They have the 6.5 terabyte, but then they've got all the way down, I think, 1.9.
plane, yeah. So you can have like 16 porters and, you know, blah, 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 10 gigs and 40 gigs and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So there's different models. So it's quite a full spectrum. It's like, it's not like you can have this and nothing else. It's actually a fully worked out sort of plan and strategy. Now, admittedly, they're not shipping in volume and blah, 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 but you're not going to see this. I don't think you're going to see this die, because there's all the signals are that come, you know, the big cloud providers are going to buy this. And there's no reason why they wouldn't, because they get the ability to program their own protocols inside the data center.
Right.
And the telemetry use case that they talked about is particularly...
I think the fact that an edge core is adopting this chipset, to me, signals that they're getting interest from their buyers, because they work on such small margins that they're not going to risk an investment if they don't feel like nobody's going to buy it.
That's right.
So I think that's a strong signal for
Barefoot. Yeah, that's right. And of course, it's in a wedge form factor. It uses the same wedge, you know, CPU, memory, FPGAs, power supplies. So it's just the chip that's different. So it's the only thing that's different is the software this time around.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm pretty confident. We talked a little bit last night about Barefoot. Where do they go in terms of, you know, do they get acquired?
Yeah.
Do they sell out?
Uh-huh.
And the suggestion was that they won't. So the way the company is funded and the way the people who are in charge is, they're not interested in selling out.
Right.
They see themselves.
This isn't a cash grab. This is trying to actually crack open how the networking market is run.
I suspect that money talks. And
oh, of course.
You know, if there was a sufficiently large truckload of cash.
This isn't a nonprofit organization either.
I know. But I do also agree that with their view that this is the whole networking industry is ripe for disruption in this space. This idea that there is a counter-cyclical trend here, of course, which is the networking market's not that large. So right. The x86 market is phenomenally huge, you know, billions of dollars. ARM CPU market is huge, you know, blah, blah, blah. DSPs are used for all sorts of things. GPUs are used in every laptop and every smartphone. Network chips?
It's a smaller market.
It's a smaller market, right? And in terms of sheer numbers, yeah. Right? And even if you can charge a premium price for your product, is the business big enough to justify multiple, you know, merchant silicon providers?
Right.
That to me is the counter-cyclical trend. So I think you're going to see like a marketing blitz here where they try and make sure that customers like you and I are interested in this product, or at least we know what it's about. So when switches turn up with, you know, Tofino inside, you're not going, "That's, I don't know what that is, and that's scary, and I'm not going to buy it." Right.
So, right. Yeah. They're definitely doing some preparation of the market to help people understand the value and why they should be interested. And also, to your point, they were very clear to say that they aren't charging a premium for this. They're trying to price it competitively with Broadcom silicon.
Well, they can, yeah, today.
Today.
Let's see about that in, you know, if they get traction, let's see what it looks like tomorrow. But still, even if they do that, you've still got a whole bunch of, you know, the programmability, the flexibility stuff is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And they were I had a quiet on the background chat about some of the hidden features that they haven't enabled yet, mm-hmm. and they're like, "Wow!" So,
stay tuned. All right, moving on, but sticking with switching, Cumulus Networks, they make a network operating system for Whitebox. They're announcing their first ever hardware platform called Cumulus Express. The hardware line, it's currently based around boxes from EdgeCore, again, there's that name, ranges from 100 gig to 100 gigabit per second devices, although 25 gig isn't available yet. They also are including compatible cables and optics, and the idea is to streamline procurement, which is another way of saying make this easier to buy.
Yeah, the old enterprise doesn't like to change much.
Well, it is a little bit sort of counterintuitive to Cumulus's message to say it's all about disaggregation. Our operating system will run across multiple platforms. You decide, you move it around, swap out software or hardware. Yeah. Sort of for them to come out and say, "Hey, now we're integrating our software with this hardware," seems like a little bit of a move back toward re-aggregation.
I think that Cumulus Networks had hoped that resellers would start buying Whitebox and then sell Cumulus licenses on top. Mm-hmm. And then resellers would then have the ability to offer value to the customers. And Cumulus was there to say, "Here's your software."
Right.
But I suspect increasingly that nothing's changing. So resellers just want to buy a box on the left and shift it on the right, get the hell out and take the cash and, you know, throw holy water on the customer and get away as fast as possible.
Sure.
Because that's how resellers have worked for the last 25 years. So that's not going to change. And I was talking to a couple of very large resellers and talking to their senior consultants, and there's just no appetite inside of resellers to start, you know, aggregating their own. They're happy to do it with Hewlett-Packard servers and Windows operating systems, but on the switch, it's just like, you're blowing my mind. Mm-hmm. Why would I do this, right? Mm-hmm. So I think this is a recognition that for a certain part of the market, they expect to buy a hardware and the network software. And if Cumulus can do a good deal with EdgeCore and hold this stock cheaply enough if they've got funds. So for me, a software-only company that's suddenly having to cash flow hardware purchases and, you know, all that sort of stuff,
right,
that changes it. So I think it's just a recognition that people in networking haven't changed. Enterprise IT doesn't want to change. You know, it makes me a bit despondent, quite honestly, to, you know, that, to think that we're at the position of an innovation like this is now like, oh, okay, we can just make it the way you want it.
So I was thinking about this, and the immediate appeal of a Cumulus is that, okay, I can swap out software or hardware as I decide. But one of the core things that they always emphasize is it's not just about that. It's about the way we've set up the network operating system is that you can manage it like you would a server operating system tied into a whole bunch of tool chains. And so that's really the core appeal. So this edge core approach says, all right, we know what you're really interested here is how you're managing your network operating system and the features in the network OS. It's not really about the disaggregation. So we're going to tie it in for you, nice and neat, clean package, yes, ship it. If you decide you want to swap it out later for something else, you have that capability.
It's still just
what
an
you
edge
really
core
want
switch or, yeah,
is what the value of the network operating system itself and how it ties into your tool chains and operations. That's what you really want. You don't care about loading it yourself and doing all that, yes, other stuff. So just sell us a box with the software pre-integrated, yeah, and save us some time.
Yeah, and sad. You know, really, you know, this idea of I have to buy my all from one supplier and I want one throat to choke is just, you know, that's obsolete. That's a myth. We haven't had that in IT for 30 years since, mm-hmm, we started putting Windows on HP servers. Why do you want that? But I am, you know, I just feel, just makes me feel weary that we can't actually modernize in networking.
But the fact that there's, yeah, people are taking a chance on a whole new network operating system, I think, is a sign that there's a little bit of change. And it,
yes,
and again, because, oh, yeah, of, yeah, the, yeah, way you can manage the network operating system,
yes,
that's change.
Yeah. So, I mean, even companies like Mellanox are getting into selling Cumulus directly on their boxes. Mm-hmm. But you buy that from Mellanox, right? So you,
sure,
buy Mellanox and Cumulus.
Sure.
You have your choice to buy your Cumulus operating system directly from Mellanox. But the question, you know, if you're using a company from EdgeCore and that's just straight from the manufacturer's warehouse, well, then resellers should have picked this up. And they should have sold it as a unified unit and put some tech support. So, you know, these companies who have thousands of engineers and 24/7 help desks because Cisco forced them to, why aren't they,
right,
you know, doing this?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they can just have back-end support agreements and spare parts and – but no, that's not – that's why I'm – you know, there's so many aspects to this. That
Greg
just
is
make,
sad.
It's much sadness, much despondence.
All right, another quick break to talk to you about ThousandEyes. As your network expands to include cloud services, ISPs, and third-party providers, visibility diminishes. That's a huge problem when you're running critical applications, websites, and services. So ThousandEyes is here to give you visibility into every network your company relies on. So that's corporate, the internet, cloud service providers, all from one place. They've got cloud agents that are deployed all across the globe, and then they have enterprise agents to put on your premises where you get additional visibility from within your own network. And with this vantage point, you've got both outside and inside, you get the most complete understanding of your topology, dependencies, and behavior. So you can do things like piece together multiple layers of network insight, whether that's BGP and routing and DNS, web servers, layer 3 performance. You can quickly and precisely pinpoint root causes of problems like device faults, congestion, DDoS attacks. You can also share this data and insights with your vendors and customers to help resolve problems faster. And here's a special offer just for Packet Pushers listeners. You can sign up for a free account at ThousandEyes.com/PacketPushers and choose a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. Start seeing your network like you've never seen it before. ThousandEyes, it's network intelligence you can see. Back to the news. Gigamon, their stock dropped by more than a quarter in the hours after the company announced bad preliminary results for Q4 and for fiscal year 2013. I just looked at the stock this morning when we're recording on a Friday. It was trading around $31 a share. That's down from about $44 a share where it was before the announcement. So it looks like a cliff.
It does. $44 to $30, that's like a 35% drop, yeah, in a single, like literally just at an opening price.
Yeah.
I read the announcement. Basically, the CEO was presenting, they did a pre-announcement before their results saying that their Q4 was going to be bad and that they were expecting to come in at about 10% under their numbers. Mm. That's pretty grim, right? And more importantly, there wasn't any, we'll return up, you know, we'll be back next quarter. And, you know, we've got deals in the pipeline. We've got, you know, it was just a one-off. There was none of that. It was, we didn't perform, but we had a great year, you know.
Right, right.
And we've got to remember that about this time about last year, Gigamon was in the poop again, mm-hmm, right? So they all, basically what they've done is reversed all the gains from 2016. They're just gone back to where they were for 2015 share price, which sort of signals things. I get the sense that Gigamon went out there, they went hard into the customer base and then they churned the customer base, modernized it, you know, resold some more, you know, upgraded some stuff and, you know, refreshed the people. Great deals, salespeople kicking and screaming, you know, there's a sales manager beating the hell out of the salespeople to go and get, and all of a sudden it just went.
Right. Right.
I think this market, this whole visibility market, this idea of what Gigamon and VRV and what Big Switch is, Big Monitoring Fabric, and, you know, that whole market is just, once was very, very niche, very, you know, very cozy. It was this big and all the customers needed it, and it was a lovely little profitability, and, you know, everybody's happy. And that market's getting a lot more crowded now because you look at what Tofino does. It has these features in it.
Well, one of the things that Barefoot and Tofino talked about was you can start doing some telemetry right on the device itself.
Yes.
So pulling out statistics.
Yep.
They're talking about tracking a packet across every switch and getting information on that packet. How long is it in the queue? What kind of latency? All that stuff. And then just shipping it out, all in software. So
if I was an investor in Gigamon, I'd be nervous.
Yeah.
Because that market is finite and there are new technologies coming along that's grabbing away the TAM, the total available market for sales.
And if you look at people coming into the market about visibility and network monitoring, it's all about software. It's not about a big, giant hardware device stuck off a span port.
Well, increasingly, you can do a lot of this stuff. A lot of the basic features that were only available in these visibility appliances are now available as in software for merchant silicon.
Yeah.
Or you can just use a white box switch like what Big Switch does and turn it, invert it into a visibility platform, right?
Right.
So I don't see how Gigamon comes back, like how they can go and grow their market share with their current portfolio because it's so specialized and so unique. Where's the growth?
Growth seems like a challenge.
Yes.
Yeah.
So security is definitely hot, and having Gigamon building security and getting those. But Gigamon is just one part of a whole ecosystem of security tools.
Right.
And I just don't see this particular market segment growing much. And there's a whole bunch of competitors. We've seen bunches of them over the years come and go and trade. And, you know, Gigamon's okay, but you know, they did a great job of selling themselves for the year and convincing investors that they've got a story, but I don't think the value gets away in the long run.
Yeah, they're going to have to think about their strategy.
Yes, or sell themselves, get bought by somebody.
All right, last week we reported on some hurt feelings around VMUG, the VMware user group, because some volunteer leaders of local VMUGs were forced to step down because they happened to work for VMware competitors, and Nutanix in particular felt like it was being particularly targeted, and there was some blog posts about this and questions about what does it mean to be VMUG leadership, and is this all about community or competition? So Eric Shanks, he blogs at the IT Hollow. He had written a post about the dispute originally. Now he's got a follow-up. He actually spoke directly with Brad Tompkins, who's the CEO of VMUG, and the CEO confirmed that, yes, people who work for VMware competitors won't be allowed to head up VMUGs.
That rule was in place, though.
That rule was in place, but it wasn't
been policed or enforced. People had just it wasn't obvious that was.
They hadn't made a stink about it before, VMUG.
Yeah, I think that just sort of happened without, and all of a sudden they went, oh, we've got a problem.
I mean, honestly, if you're going to devote resources to running a technical community organization, it's probably going to be somebody who's got some financing behind them to do it, right?
Yeah, well, you've got to have time and resources and bandwidth, and you might just let it slide because.
Right.
But, you know, as I said last week, and as you're saying here, it wasn't an effort by the VMUG to single out Nutanix, but it is the Nutanix employees who act in a very negative way.
Right.
You know, they're very aggressive. They're heavily willing to criticize their competitors, and VMware is a direct competitor to Nutanix. Nutanix encourages its employees to act like children, and go no, our product's better than yours, and you know. And so, if you're heading up a VMUG, and your company, and by association, you know, associated with that, hardly a surprise.
So my assumption is, and again, this is just my assumption, is that VMUG put this rule in place initially saying if you work for a competitor, you can't run a thing, can't run a group. But it was people who were working for competitors who were running groups, and as long as you didn't cross the line, they were going to turn a blind eye to it. Maybe some people started crossing the line, somebody started taking advantage of it, and so now VMUG is saying, all right, we're calling out this rule, we're putting it in place. Unfortunately, there is no VMUG won't publish an official list of which competitors are allowed to or not allowed to.
But that's fine, right? In a community, it doesn't...
Sure.
As soon as you start making hard and fast rules, right, the rules have to be followed.
Yes,
right. So it's
true.
Much better to sit there and say, right, we're going to take this step today, and then let's see how that works out.
Right.
Right? So, you know, grown-up behavior. Stop being children and saying, where's my rules? I want the teacher. I want to see the rule written down. Right? None of that. Right? Act like a grown-up, right? This is a business.
Right.
They don't want to get themselves backed into a corner saying, this is the exactly official list of him, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
That's much more fluid than that. Right?
I guess it is allowing them to keep a little bit more of that flexibility, but it also feels like... we've got a secret list, and are you on it? I don't know. Ooh.
You know, if you're working for a company like Nutanix, and you feel like you're constantly being attacked by your competitor, and the company promotes that sort of mindset inside its sales teams and its employees, then guess what you want to think, right?
Right.
You know, just be a grown up,
right?
Right, and say, right, this is a community. It needs to be fluid. It needs to be flexible. They shouldn't be have to be asked to produce a list like this. Just, you know.
That's the thing. At the end of the day, it should be about the community. It should be about sharing information. Yeah.
And if you're feeling persecuted, get a pair.
Right.
You know, like, think of the bigger picture. It's not about you.
Right.
Right. Nothing's about you. No one cares about you. No one cares about your attitude. Think about the whole community and stop feeling like you've been personally persecuted or abused because somebody enforced, you know, a personally perfectly reasonable rule. Whiners.
Well, I guess part of it, the issue, it seems like, based on reading Eric's blog, is that this notion of community feels like it's about people. Hmm. But at the end of the day, VMUG is still trying to sell VMware product. That's what it's about.
Yes.
So this mix of community and commercial always makes people feel a little icky when it gets called out explicitly like this.
I think this whole idea of user groups and, you know, these vendor-sponsored communities is pretty much dying anyway.
You
think
this
is a sign. I think so. It's just too much conflict of interest. It's not something that you want, mm-hmm. right? You know, this idea of vendors committing millions of dollars to produce a community of friends just doesn't seem to... Like, I'm not a member of any of these programs. I'm not a member of... But I've been a definite beneficiary of going to VMUGs and, you know, talking to people and learning stuff. Mm-hmm. So I've got this, you know, this ambivalent sort of a thing. But I've been to meetups, which are true community efforts. No one's paying for it.
Right, right.
And they just don't have the resources to organize correctly. So on one hand, I want to see them. But on the other hand, it's like there's so much, this is the direction. It's got to support the goals of the people who are giving us the money. And, and I think also as we move away to the cloud and we start to move up to applications, this idea of my tribe is VMware or my tribe is Cisco or I'm a Juniper thingamy or I'm a blah, 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 I don't think that makes – that just seems like a transition that we went through and that thing is coming to an end. Mm. There's a natural progression of these things and it's like a teenage thing to feel like I'm in a club.
Right.
And now we're all grown-ups and you know, the market's changing. Maybe it's time to just move on.
Okay. All right. Well, that actually brings us to the end of the show. Greg, where can folks get more from you?
You can find me on my microblog at etherealmind.com, on the Twitters at etherealmind, and of course, there's lots more fine content on Packet Pushers. I'll be blogging there.
All right. I'm Drew Conroy Murray. I'm on Twitter at Drew_CM, and I blog at packetpushers.net. Thanks to our sponsors, IT Pro TV and Thousand Eyes. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Network Break. If you like the show, give us a like on Facebook, leave a recommendation on iTunes, or share a link with your colleagues. And please check out our newsletter, Human Infrastructure Magazine, and Link Propagation. You can find out how to sign up for free at packetpushers.net. And don't forget about all the fine free technical content at packetpushers.net. Thanks for listening.